Hey, good morning, and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, and it is the 27th of May, and it's a delight to have you with us. And let me introduce our panel to you this morning, and then we will get started. We have a myriad of issues to talk about, and we're very excited to do so. Later on, we will get a lockbox update, and I don't want to give anything away, but the news ain't bad.
Lockbox, we're very
excited. If you would like to get your total included in the... I thought you were going to say, well, hey, you do your thing there, Alan.
No, I didn't. Say, yeah. You said lockbox.
Yeah, lockbox. Yeah, there you go. Okay. I would...
That's his thing.
I know. I was just...
It's all our thing when you think about it. You know, it's all our thing. We're all in this together.
Yes, dear.
Oh, have I said that before?
Yes, dear.
Let me introduce our panelists to you. Joining me for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Lockbox Shartok.
How are you? Better lockbox than lockjaw, I can tell you that much.
It's all according to who you talk to.
Also here, Times Union, or as we say, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
The world's nicest man. Nobody has ever. Maybe Kevin Moran of the Berkshire Eagle and Mike could have a contest.
A nice off?
These guys are the nicest people anybody has ever met.
And he's a journalist.
I know. Well, that's what I think what we measure it on.
Right.
There are those who would disagree. You know.
I've ever met.
And now the nicest person.
The nicest public relations consultant.
Why is the nicest political consultant? Now, that also is an oxymoron.
But I think you're nothing but nice to us.
Right.
The wonderful Libby Post is here today, and Rosemary is out with dental issues.
So
we wish her well on her dental issues. So Libby, Mike, and Alan are here. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we would love to hear from you. And as we walk through the many topics that we have that have happened over the last 3 days over this long holiday weekend, which is always supposed to be a very slow time, but there is no shortage of stories to talk about, so we'll get to as many as we possibly can, beginning with the vote in Ukraine. And now in Ukraine, fighting at the airport continues as the president-elect vows to seek unity. Explosions and gun battles continued to rock the separatist region of eastern Ukraine late Monday night as state security forces fought rebels for control of a major airport hours after Ukraine's president-elect declared in Kiev that he would seek to unite the nation after the months-long crisis. A lot to talk about on this, but let's simply wrap it up by saying or asking the question, what do you make by the elections and what we saw happen over the weekend in Ukraine?
Well, a couple of things. The elections going forward prove that this gazillionaire, won. I think he's a sugar magnate or candy magnate.
Confectionary magnate.
Right. He could just, mellow everyone out with chocolate.
Right.
A spoonful of sugar.
Right.
But the real question that everybody who is listening or around this table right now is thinking is, what's really going on? I mean, who are the players? All of a sudden, jets are flying for the Ukrainian nation, the Kiev guys.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Jets are flying, right. and they're bombing the hell out of the opposition, the people who have been portrayed in this country as the thugs who have taken over the Russian separatists. Where's Putin at this stage of the game? Well, first he was making fun of the new potential leadership. Now he's making nice about the potential leadership. And maybe money. Libby is rubbing her fingers together in that classic radio pose, meaning money. It's all about money. But it also may be that there is some subterranean stuff going on about how we feel, what Putin is worried about, which is if there are jets flying, flying, who's flying the jets? If there's technical stuff behind the jets, who's doing that? What role are the people from the CIA playing in all of this? Could this lead, if it really escalates to something that Putin really doesn't want? You know, one thing about a bully is you can bully your way around until the other guy fights back a little bit. And so there is that. Now, there'll be people listening who are already at their, you know, computers saying, come on, Alan, the Russians have every right to all of this. This has always been in their sphere of influence. You're naive. You don't get it. So, you know, there are many perspectives to this, depending on who you are. But for some reason, it does appear that Putin is backing off a bit.
What I find interesting with the background of this vote is the other votes that happened in Europe.
Yeah, yeah.
This week.
Yeah, we can talk about that too. Yeah.
Where the ultra-nationalists are seeming to take a foothold against the European Union. And, you know, it's sort of like this new wave of ultra-nationalism is starting to, again, go through Europe. It's part of what Russia's all about. And it's a little frightening.
You know what happened? I mean, we had a version of that in this country.
Yeah, it's called the Tea Party.
It's called Lou Dobbs. It's called the Tea Party. But we got over it. We went through it. Once people recognized.
We're over the Tea Party? That's good.
Well, I think we are.
I think we are because all the Tea Party guys are losing to the so called, but right wing moderates.
People want their snowplowed. Yeah. You know,
that's true.
That's the thing.
Well, okay.
But
we digress.
It's your turn, Mike.
Well, no, what I think is hopeful here is that Russia is at least saying they're welcoming, you know, talking to the new president, and you know, the fact that they are not coming out, you know, and saying it's an illegitimate election like they had been suggesting before the election is a good sign. And I think you're right. I think it shows that Putin wants to back off because he may be in a little too deep. I mean, if he escalates and then Europe escalates, I mean, it's sort of who's going to blink. What if the European Union doesn't escalate if he escalates, and then, you know, that falls apart as far as a defense mechanism goes? And, you know, there's a lot at stake here, and I think it would be very hopeful if people would back off, and this may give them the cover to back off, because, you know, this guy is kind of like a Russian anyway. He's a billionaire, you know, and they like those in Russia, you know, and they get along with Putin. He has a lot of billionaire friends.
Sort of their Ross Perot.
He's very right. He's very articulate, though. He speaks English quite well, you know, so he can appeal to the West, and you know,
probably by a basketball team.
That's true. Yeah.
The latest news that came out just about 4 minutes ago that broke was that they say that 50 militiamen died in the Ukraine attack, according to separatist leader. The self-described Prime Minister Alexander Borodai says this is war. Our losses are serious, but our opponent's losses are not less and maybe even more. So we would, you know, obviously, we would like to see this without more bloodshed, but it seems as though the way this is going to go over the next couple of days is more violence as things settle down.
Well, you know, Joe, I think this thing had civil war written all over it from the very beginning. I mean, you know, there was an intellectual disagreement, and that obviously was going to lead to the guns and the guys leaning down by the airport with carbines in their hands and shooting at each other. And I think that may be Putin's real worry. I think the last thing he needs is to be being the supplier in a civil war for the pro Russian side. He got what he wanted. He got the
seaports.
Right.
Yeah, Crimea.
Right.
Crimea.
What does he need the rest of it for? Although there are those who suspected this was the first plank in the re-Russianization of, you know, of the
Eastern
old
Europe.
Of the old group, you know, getting together again. But I don't think.
Hey, one good thing to point out here is that they're claiming that there was a 60% turnout across the country. We only had a 57.5% turnout.
I was going to say that.
In the last presidential election in the United States. So.
And they are saying it was a very poor turnout. The opponents of the election are saying it's a very poor turnout. I say, hey, wait a second now. If we get over 50% in this country, we're lucky.
Well, in the Donetsk region, you know, which is sort of in contention, it was much lower. But across the entire country, they are saying it was 60%. There's a lot of international, you know, election monitors there. So we'll get more about that. But that's hopeful. That would help quell the notion of a civil war if there was a sense that this was the majority's, you know, view.
Right, and the Donetsk region only accounts for 15% of the vote, so it's not about to be able to swing it back with 60%, you know, voting and that sort of stuff. What I found interesting is also Poroshenko, the new guy, his comparing the militants in the Ukraine to the Somali pirates. And, you know, there's a very high level of racism in Russia. And I just found that to be another fascinating snippet of that culture and where things are going and what the lows that people will go to make their point.
To motivate.
Yeah.
We're gonna motivate hate.
Yeah, motivate hate.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I would like to talk about other balloting, Dateline Brussels, and talk about the elections in the for the European Parliament, and we'll talk about that and much more. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Storm King Arts Center, a 500-acre sculpture park in Orange County, New York, offering Saturday morning yoga every Saturday and programs for children and adults Sundays at 1 p.m. StormKing.org. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tasting Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Curtis Lumber, proudly serving their communities for over 100 years, providing lumber, building materials, doors, windows, paint, and more for 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. And University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Social Work program, mswonline.unh.edu.
Welcome back to the roundtable and our panel discussion this morning. Libby Post, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you.
We just got a complaint, Joe, that the video stream wasn't working. And it's good to know that somebody is trying to see us on the video. You go to WNC.org.
And we're working on it now.
And yes, but also it's good to know that anybody wants to see us.
Yeah, so if they
ordinarily
want to see,
they can see us.
Ordinarily. They can't right now, but
they may be able to very soon. All Ray's got to do is push a button. Yeah. He's a genius.
But we all have faces made for radio, so you know.
It's working now? Okay. Oh, it always was? It's been working? Okay.
No, there's one format, there's one set of machines, as I understand it, that doesn't get the video.
Yeah.
I don't know which manufacturer it is, but, you know, all the regular ones do. So, you know, go out and get a regular one.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, we'll figure it out, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe.
Or not.
Where were we going to go? Oh, we were going to talk about the EU. That's right. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. In France, Britain, and elsewhere, voters turned against traditional parties to support anti-immigrant groups opposed to the European Union. An angry eruption of populist insurgency in the elections for the European Parliament rippled across the continent on Monday, unnerving the political establishment and calling into question the very institutions and assumptions at the heart of Europe's post-World War II order. Ooh.
This is scary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is scary stuff. I mean, you have one candidate, successful candidate, saying that Hitler didn't know about the Holocaust. there's lots of anti-Semitism injected into this group which is something that the French know a great deal about and have for many, many years. Dreyfus comes to mind, and subsequently to that. And it's interesting because some very leftist candidates won also.
Yeah.
So what you have here are people who are dissatisfied with the status quo. They don't like their lives. And they say, okay, make me a promise. You could be Jerry Brown on the left in California in the old days, or you could be Ronald Reagan on the right. But we want somebody who says, I can make it better, as opposed to ho-hum, you know, you're going to keep on getting what you're getting. And that's why. Now, remember, this is the European Parliament, which is not exactly the same as when you vote for your prime minister or your members of parliament in these individual countries. So it becomes sort of a potential laboratory for how things are going. It's still scary, but it does look awful.
The usual folks held the majority of the seats, and so the markets have bounced back. But there's a lot of anti-EU folks that have gotten elected. They don't hold the majority yet, but it's very scary. And they're Europe's Tea Party. They call them Eurosceptic parties of the far right and the far left.
But how different is it in this country than it is there? In other words, if you think about it, we don't elect the Ms. Penn in France, somebody like that. But we have guys like Ted Cruz, mm-hmm. and you know, mm-hmm. some of the others who make some awful noises, for themselves. And then you go into the barber I did months ago and got a lecture about how poor people get everything, you know. Not my wonderful barber, Joe B. Ritmo, in here in Albany, but a guy over in the Berkshires. And, you know, we give out free televisions. We give out, you know, this is the kind of stuff.
Free televisions.
You know, there's the free phones.
Where do I get my free TV?
The truck will pull up.
You're not poor enough. Central That's Avenue. The whole point. Yeah. So in other words, there's this mythology that goes on. And it's one of the ways in which the lower middle class and middle class are kept by the right, by the upper right, which is to say, look down. Those are the people who are trying to take your jobs. Those are the people, not us, saying you can't raise the
right.
raise your taxes or do any of that stuff. It's them. And that works. That
it
kind
does.
Of displacement
oh, no,
works.
I think your analysis is yeah. right on. And we do, there are parallels. And another parallel is that there's very poor voter turnout throughout Europe. I was just reading it in the New York Times that, you know, some of these percentages of people who have turned out for these votes are even lower than in the U.S., which is even lower than in Ukraine. So people are only the most motivated, which are probably the most unhappy, are turning out. And you're right. They're going right or left.
Mike, may I point out that's how Adolf Hitler came to power. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody thought it was a joke, but it wasn't.
I do want to read one quote from Charles Grant, who is director of the Center for European Reform. There have been assertions that the European Union had suffered a fatal blow. He says those assertions are overblown. Mm-hmm. Cats have 9 lives, and the EU has already had 7 or 8.
Well, this is
slightly overblown.
One?
Yeah, it doesn't sound.
Is this it? Is this the last one that
right.
they have?
Right. So that's still, seems like the cat's not right. feeling great.
Right.
Well, there's got to be some evolution. What's the next phase? I mean, you know, you had first some looser agreements between European countries. Now you have the European Union. What's next? You know.
Yeah. Well, the real question is, did the European Union go far enough in creating, you know, the United States of Europe, as opposed to what they did come up with, which is kind of half, but it sometimes it takes a little bit of doing to get over these emotional hurdles which are faced by the populi who can succumb to this kind of racism, as Libby says, and other things that exist. It's the way that people are mobilized.
It's also, you know, there was a line in the article about, for leading European Jews, though, the far-right surge stirred deep alarm coming a day after the deadly attack of the Jewish Museum in Brussels.
Mm-hmm.
These two events are connected and connected very closely, according to the president of the European Jewish Congress.
I have no doubt that these ultra-nationalist groups are really neo-Nazis when you come down to it, in their souls. And, you know, here we blame the poor people for our ills. There they blame the Jews. And I think there's some of that blame going on here, too, in the United States. But there it's an easy target because we don't have a large Jewish population anymore in Europe. And it's so much easier to say those kinds of things. And, you know, you were referred to France and what they've known this for a very long time. And it's not an easy place to go and be proud and be out as a Jew in Europe as it once had been. And I do think that all this is connected because it's the ultra-nationalists and we are the other. And right. we are not them, and we're not pure.
Also, isn't there, Libby, something about this country in which we have said, you know, we've tacked on years for somebody's sentence if it's a hate crime, mm-hmm. and which doesn't always exist there, although in some countries it's against the law to be anti-Semitic. I think that's
against the law to deny the Holocaust.
Yeah. On the other hand, try going to Austria sometimes and see what's palpable.
It's not easy.
There, I've said it.
Yes. It's not easy being a Jew in Europe. It's just not.
We would love to hear your thoughts. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. We have many, many other issues to discuss, and we will do so right after this news break. In the meantime, we welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org, and we'll be back after this. We welcome your letters for this morning, and we love for you to comment on what we're talking about. Roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org.
Hey, Joe, we got one from Michaela who says, loves Libby in the roundtable, loved hearing Libby laugh about being the nicest political consultant. Love the show and loves Libby.
That's great. Libby thank you.
Fan club.
Thank you, thank you. How's that?
The CIA's top officer in Kabul was exposed Saturday by the White House when his name was inadvertently included on a list provided to news organizations of senior U.S. officials participating in President Obama's surprise visit with the U.S. troops in Afghanistan. The White House recognized the mistake and quickly issued a revised list that did not include the individual who had been identified in the initial release as the chief of station in Kabul, a designation used by the CIA for its highest-ranking spy in the country. The Washington Post has certainly they have withheld the name of the CIA officer at the request of the Obama administration officials, who warned that the officer and his family could be at risk if the names were published. The CIA and the White House declined to comment further.
When you have a surprise visit and you got to get all this stuff together quick, mistakes get made.
Yeah, a little mistake which could cost somebody their life.
Right. Well, what's the protocol now? Do they remove him and bring in a new station chief? I mean, is that...
They might. Yeah. It was unclear in the article because they
said...
Because
now they're not talking about it.
Right, yeah. Because nobody put the name out in the paper.
Right. There was some respect within the media not to repeat it or not to reveal it after a reporter for the Washington Post got the press release and sent it out to 600 of his followers before the amended list came. So it's out there. And I guess this means there's a bullseye on this guy.
Sure. And even one could rationalize it and say, well, you know, the people who really need to know this stuff. But it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the fact that we spend billions, and I'm talking billions of dollars on our security. And you know, nobody had a clue that the wall was coming down in Germany and that these things happen. It just makes you scratch your head and say, are we overdoing it? Do we have too many people doing, you know, sort of stupid stuff as opposed to really thinking about, you know, what the great trends are? You know, I hate to interrupt here, but we got a letter, which I don't agree with, but please don't use my name letter, saying, gotcha, rather than the...
Then I don't read it letter.
friends, Magenta would like to say, rather than the Semitocentric lens.
Semitocentric lens. Yeah. I've never heard that before.
Well, I get it, though which you seem to be viewing the situation in Europe. Those of us who have lived there recognize it's such a different situation because we are talking about multiple historically distinct cultural developed over the centuries. In fact, that was mentioned this morning, if not millennia, that are pushed right up against each other, close proximity, having their cultural heritage disintegrate, largely seen as caused by the enormous continuous waves of current and past immigration from Africa and near Middle East. This is, and in capital letters, this is much more the issue, the fear of Islamization of Europe. I just thought I'd read that because
there are some cultural groups and history and richness that have been totally lost in Europe.
Yeah, but don't you like the word Semitocentric?
Oh, yeah, Semitocentric. That's really a new one for me.
Yeah.
Right. Just call it. Why don't you just say what you think? We're being too Jewish on the air. That's really what he's
now
saying.
Now, there you've gone and said it.
That's what he's saying. We're being too Jewish on the air, and isn't that too bad?
Mike, we have to stop that.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You two Irish Catholic
guys. Let's be very Irish Catholic.
You guys only step up.
It's only 50-50.
Oh, now, what did you hear Father O'Malley say yesterday, Joe?
All right, there's. I just want to get back to the CIA story real quick. Because two things. First of all, what you mentioned would be of talking about a secret trip. Well, it was secret to us. Hopefully, like they had planned, and there's really no excuse for that.
Sure.
Noted that the disclosure marked a rare instance in which a CIA officer working overseas had his cover the secrecy meant to protect his actual identity pierced by his own government. The only other recent case came under significantly different circumstances when CIA operative Valerie Plame was exposed as officials of the Bush administration sought to discredit her husband, Joseph Wilson, a former ambassador and fierce critic of the decision to invade Iraq. And Alan, so I guess I would say, there's no chance that this was blown
intentionally.
One never knows, but no, I think it's more
stupidity
that does it. And somebody will be, how many times, Mike, have you seen a young editor or an editor put
a journalist put a
headline on an article that does not reflect what's in the article? Some of these things, everybody's overworked or some people are underworked, whatever the rationale.
Well, I think in haste, somebody in the White House press office just wanted to show, how many people were there and how well it was attended and give a sense of the hierarchy that was with the president when he made this surprise last-minute visit secret visit into Afghanistan to talk to the troops on Memorial Day weekend. And in their haste, they just took the cut and paste.
Right.
That's where a lot of mistakes happen.
That's what I was just about to say that. It's the ease of copy and paste or cut and paste.
Yeah.
But you can just see the ramifications of this. I mean, let's just say you're right that there is a bullseye. Let's say something terrible happens. It's Benghazi all over again.
Mm-hmm. Let me get to some other stories here because we have a lot to get to, and I want to get to as many as we can before we go over to our a break and then our lockbox update. So where do we go next? I guess this is an interesting story as well. The Bureau of Indian Affairs proposes revising rules for recognizing Native American tribes. The U.S. Interior Department at the end of last week announced proposed changes to the rules for granting federal recognition to American Indian tribes, revisions that could make it easier for some groups to achieve status that brings increased benefits as well as opportunities for commercial development. The Bureau of Indian Affairs said it overhauled the rules to make tribal acknowledgement more transparent and efficient.
Well, it's making up for some of the gaps that it created when it required that they provide documentation. This is a culture that didn't keep a lot of paperwork for several centuries, and then they were kind of pillaged by the great American expansion. Yeah,
truly one of the worst blots on American history.
Yes.
And making it a little bit easier for an Indian nation to, portray itself as legitimate representation of its culture and its heritage is a good step. It it still isn't enough in some people's opinions. But interestingly, in the state of Connecticut, a lot of politicians are complaining about it. They're saying it's going too far, and all they're really doing is letting more Indian groups come in and open casinos, you know, and that's what they're afraid of. So, you know, no matter what you do, they'll have its critics.
And it seems that that seems to trivialize it, that we've come down to casinos. But also, when you look at what when that and I don't want to trivialize it any further, but it seemed when that mattered more, in which the only way you could get, you know, that we were talking about casino gambling even in New York State was with the recognition of a tribe, that now kind of all bets are off. It's just we're letting anybody do it. Mm-hmm. And you know, you wonder, well, okay, well, is this maybe a little bit too late?
Hmm. Well, the benefit of all this is that you'll be able to Indian nations will be able to get added benefits and health care for their members. Now, they didn't get that if they couldn't document that they were the true representatives. And that is it's a good thing. You know, I think overall it may fall short in some people's opinions, but it's a good step.
Let's go to the horrifying story, I think, out of California. A day and a half after a shooting rampage in California. And this is really just a tragic, horrible story. Left six victims dead. Senator Richard Blumenthal, also of Connecticut, said Sunday the tragedy serves as a reminder of the legislative efforts to stem gun violence that occurred in the aftermath of the Sandy Hook shooting. The Democrat from Connecticut appeared on CBS's Face the Nation, said statements from the California victims' families bring the nation back to when it seemed like we were on the verge of potentially legislation that would stop the madness and end the insanity. It was a major attack. Elliot Roger is accused of killing six people and then himself on Friday night around Santa Barbara, California. He passed a background check, needed to buy the firearm used in the shooting. Mm. There's also a lot about the motive to target women who had dumped him.
A 10-year-old.
Was to use to use it as a way to... Right. to
well. I mean, that story confirms that this fella had severe mental health issues.
And the parents knew it, and they yelled about it, and they asked for help.
But even when they asked for help, sheriff deputies came and interviewed him, and he didn't, you know, portray himself as being at high risk. Yeah. I mean, how do you make that assessment? I guess in general, wouldn't we be a lot better off if we just loosened up the purse strings and provided more mental health services to society in general? You'd catch more of this. Maybe this wouldn't have been prevented, but for crying out loud, I mean, you know, it just seems to be a gap in our healthcare system.
You know, Mike, I wrote a long time ago a doctoral dissertation on this issue. And people don't want to pay for mental health because the mentally ill are not always organized. Their parents are not organized. It goes down to the bottom of the barrel, and now we see what we get as a result of that.
Precisely.
But you know, when you talk about who gets together and what can be done when you have a movement, the AIDS movement being a pretty good example. You know, this is a terrible situation. People got together, and all of a sudden, the government responded, and with great effect. But until that happens in this country, until the mentally ill have advocates who are really making the case, it's not going to happen, because you'd have to spend billions for community mental health centers and to make this work.
But I agree with you. I think we need to spend more on mental health. I think there needs to be the resources. We also need to get rid of the guns.
Well, I mean,
Wayne LaPierre will get up on his high horse and say people kill people, guns don't kill people, and you've got these morons going into Chilies and Chipotle. I think it's down in Texas with their guns as a show that we can carry our guns wherever we want to carry them. Sure. You know, AK-47s and things like that. And this kid in California was really mentally ill, and was able to get a gun. And, you know, there's no reason for him to have had a gun, period. Just like there was no reason for the guy in Sandy Hook to be able to get a gun or his mother to be able to buy guns. What do we need these for?
Also, and then I just want to tie this into the other story out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where there were three killed, five wounded in shootings in Myrtle Beach. And I thought, oh, well, this was a horrible story where something else has happened, similar to what happened in California. Then to realize that there were six separate shootings and none of them were related.
Well, that proves what Libby just said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that is when you have six in a night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Myrtle Beach isn't that big a place. And it's really not like a an inner city,
it's a crime-ridden area.
It's a vacation place.
Tourism attraction.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So that is stunning.
That's just, I just don't get it. I really don't get it.
Yeah. Joe just wanted to say, we heard from Nick, who says, Nick says, I think the comment, it's not being easy a Jew in Europe, might be an exaggeration. I really hope so. It depends on where you are. Even in France, Penn's major beef is immigration, which means African and North African. In Britain, there is a tiny minority that might harbor the anti-Jewish sentiment. But again, the major target is immigration, mainly now from European countries. Outside of Paris, there are more French living in London than any other Euro city. Two explanation points. Amazing. There's that. And then there is Michael says, you know why there are trees planted on the Champs-Élysées? So that the Nazis could march in the shade. He says that. And on. That's what we got so far.
I'm not sure what that means.
So they wouldn't sweat?
Let's move on to some other issues, and then we'll take a break in just a few minutes. There's still the question about the obviously the BA story has continued to play itself out. An open letter from a senior Republican senator to the nation's veterans in which he castigates the leadership of veterans organizations prompted a brutal war of words over the Memorial Day weekend, including a promise from the veterans of foreign wars that its hat-in-hand approach to Congress will turn more combative. The controversy over delayed access to care at Department of Veterans Affairs hospitals veered over the weekend away from allegations of incompetence at the top of the agency toward a broader fight over resources and the future of government health care for an expanding pool of veterans. Senator Richard M. Burr is the senator who made the comments.
Well, that's a brilliant political strategy to tick off the veterans groups in America. You
what
say,
an idiot.
What has he got in mind here? How's this going to pay off for him? He was criticizing them for not being vocal enough,
against the administration.
An open letter. He's a senator from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the analysis of this was that the Republicans were complaining that the Democrats in providing their funding weren't letting the Republicans make any amendments. But what's really at stake, many say, is that it's a budget fight. Republican leaders are not wanting to spend more money. They say that the VA, Veterans Administration, is inefficient every year. They have millions of dollars left in their budget. Let's spend that before we start spending more taxpayers' money. And it just seems to be a philosophical fight over money, and it's getting caught up in rhetoric. And meanwhile, how many veterans are returning from the most recent war? Something like 2.8 million veterans from Iraq and from Afghanistan.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, and many of them are going to be in need for many, many years of continued medical coverage, for the injuries and the
PTSD.
Leftover.
You know, it's like Rome is burning, guys.
Yeah.
Do the right thing here. Last night I was watching TV, the NCIS LA marathon on USA.
How could you watch that stuff?
Oh, I always watch
I mean,
watch
it's
stuff.
A terrible series. Come
but,
on now.
NCIS
is great, but the LA thing is unwatchable.
Okay, so be that as it may, Mark Wahlberg comes on, and this commercial came on a lot about the Wounded Warrior Project or whatever it is that the Lone Warrior Project, whatever it is he was doing. And it's like, they're just like other organizations. They're coming out with these long 60-second commercials to get you to give because the government's not taking care of the people the government should be taking care of. And these guys are coming back with unbelievable PTSD, but also mm-hmm. physical injuries that are, you know, beyond what we saw in Vietnam, beyond right. what we saw.
Many soldiers who died in Vietnam, they were able to save and rescue through great, extraordinary medical care, but now they need long-term
right,
care.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I just want to point out one thing.
Okay.
Just getting back to the gun
thing. We only have about 30 seconds.
The gun thing for a minute. The Daily News today.
Yeah.
His family saw all the signs. This is the front page. His family saw all the signs of a son on the edge, but the cops said he was fine. He bought his guns legally. The NRA would have called him a model gun owner, and then he became a mass murderer. America in denial. And that's exactly where we're at when it comes to guns.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get a lockbox update. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC goes on Brain Injury Association of Massachusetts for over 30 years, working to provide support, prevention, education, and advocacy for brain injury survivors and families. BIAMA.org for resources. MPAC, providing the Capital Region with a full schedule of cultural events, including performances, screenings, talks, concerts, and more. MPAC.RPI.edu. Foresight Land Services, for over 45 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And Pioneer Post and Beam, a non-kit post and beam builder in Belchertown, Massachusetts, designing and erecting customized barns, artist studios, garages, and additions. PioneerPostandBeam.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable panel. As we mentioned at the beginning of the hour, we were going to give you an update on our lockbox challenge when we last left. On Friday, we needed a whole lot of money. We were worried about how the holiday weekend was going to go. We're still worried, but lo and behold, it was a very good weekend, wasn't it, Megan
Excellent
Finnegan?
Weekend.
All right. So where are we right now? And just to set this up real quick, I'm sorry. But we need to reach $325,000 by June 2nd, the start of the fund drive. And if we do, we'll get an additional $25,000. Another way of saying that we have $25,000 at stake that we will lose if we do not make how much money?
Well, we still need $74,000 by next Monday, which means that so far we've raised $250,000 wow. towards that
wow.
$325,000.
Now, look, this would be easy. Look, if everybody who is a member, if everybody who is a listener to this station said, you know what, we've all created this thing. It doesn't happen magically. It is only when we have underwriting, we have all the other stuff. But in the end, the single biggest nut here is when everybody puts something into the pot. And so when we say we have, oh, well, we have 74,000 something to go, that is really a big number. But it's not when you consider the tens of thousands of people who are listening now. So if you, and I'm asking, Alan is asking you to go and do something, put something in, just go to WAMC.org and just click on the locked box or the yep. locks box, or you could go to the phone and call 1-800-323-9262 extension
145
145 Gretchen or anybody who's yep. here, and just give something, get a mug, get your name on it. 2 weeks later you'll be married. It's all good.
There's going to be a lot of marriages too, because those mugs have been flying out of here.
Oh yeah, good point.
Excellent. So we will give you an update tomorrow, and we'd love to hear from you. The lockbox challenge is winding down. What do we have? 6 days left?
Yep, 6 days left.
All right, hurry.
Oh, boy.
6 days and 7 seconds for me to say roundtable at WAMC.org to comment on the issues we talked about, WAMC.org for the lockbox. Thank you all this morning.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
it, you. And we'll be back after this short break.
Yeah.